number. And I believe with that, we can begin. Thank you.
Please, the court, Mike McKinnon, registration number 24689, appearing on behalf of plaintiff appellant Chris Haywood. As the court knows from our brief, we've alleged error by the trial court in several different fashions. First is, as the court is aware, factually what happened was there was a third motion for extension of time to post a cost bond that was filed. The cost bond was supposed to be posted by the 17th. Actually, it would have been February 18th, 2008, because the 17th was a holiday. The cost bond was not posted on that date, but on the 19th, the 20th, a motion to file an extension to file the cost bond was filed. The cost bond then was posted on the 22nd of February, same day that the owners and auto insurance filed its objection. On the 25th, without the trial court giving Mr. Haywood the ability to go ahead and file a reply, to let the court know that the cost bond had been posted, the court goes ahead and dismisses the complaint. Under the Heitken case, we believe it's an abuse of discretion for several reasons. First is, there was the court failed to allow 10 days for Mr. Haywood to submit a reply under CRCP 121, Section 115.
Is that reversible error?
I believe it is, because it's an abuse of discretion, because as the court said, and this court said in Union Insurance versus Hottestein, 883 P. 3rd, 1196, it is abuse of discretion to not allow a party to respond within the time allotted.
I understand that, but right. It's a reversible error. Did you have the opportunity to tell the trial court that, gee, we had already posted a bond in a motion, in a post-judgment motion?
Yes.
And the trial court had the opportunity to rule on it and said, okay, so what? I'm still dismissing?
Dismissing without prejudice to go ahead and refile. The problem is statute of limitations had run, and that was pointed out to the court. And I think at that point, the very fact that, and I guess we get to a couple of different things. First of all, the statute makes clear that before the case can be dismissed, there has to be a motion to dismiss filed. There was never a motion to dismiss filed. I know the defendant appellee here says, well, we don't have to actually per se file a motion to dismiss. All we have to do is just object.
Well, counsel, they say more than they have to object. In at least three pleadings filed by the other side, they requested a dismissal. Why isn't that sufficient?
Well, because if you look at the specific, if you look at CRCP 121, Section 115, again, we have moving party and responding party. The statute says specifically a motion to dismiss. If you look at Heitken, and Heitken specifically, after the fourth extension was filed, Wake then filed a motion to dismiss, a specific motion to dismiss. Here,
so
I think
something has to be captioned motion to dismiss.
I believe so. I think the rules don't just allow you to go ahead and object and say, by the way, I go ahead and object to this.
But they did more than object. They requested dismissal.
Just
what authority is there that says you have to file a separate document titled motion to dismiss? Here you have at least three separate documents where they say we're asking for dismissal. Why isn't that enough?
Well, under CRCP, I guess 12, why is it titled a motion to dismiss for lack of whatever? Because we have certain rules that say certain actions are to be taken by a motion to dismiss. I couldn't in an answer just say, I object it should be dismissed on, you know, my affirmative defenses. I have to go ahead and still assert a motion to dismiss.
What if you filed a document that says, titled request for dismissal, and in the document you ask for dismissal for failure to state a claim? Are you telling me that the court couldn't consider that to be a motion to dismiss under Rule 12?
Well, you're initiating that. Again, you're not responding to it. Here, there was never an initiation of it, because I think the rules make clear every motion, or basically an application to the court under CRCP 7, says has to be by motion.
So, counsel, if instead of just including that in their response, if they had said, filed a separate piece of paper that had a one sentence that said, we move for the reasons set forth in our response, that would satisfy the requirement but doing it the way they did not?
I don't believe so, but then again, we would have the opportunity to go ahead and respond. And at that point, that's where I think it's abuse of discretion is, and I'll give you an example. Let's assume for sake of argument that Mr. Haywood chose not to file a third extension and just posted the bond on the 22nd. Well, guess what? Neither the court nor Appellee would have any idea that it was posted late. The case would have gone forward. So I think to say just because at this point there was a motion that was filed for an extension that was denied, which shouldn't have been denied in the first case, if you go to Hyken, they filed a motion, their third motion was late. They filed the third motion late. The court went ahead and granted it anyway. I think for the court to go ahead and just dismiss the case, and to me it looked as though it dismissed on its own versus saying, I grant the owner's auto insurance motion to dismiss, it still would not have complied with CRCP 121 section 110, which gives you 30 days to go ahead and reply on basically a failure to prosecute standard. So,
but the auto owners had asked for dismissal even before that point. When they responded to the second request for extension, they specifically said, we'd like a dismissal here. You didn't file your cost bond. So, I mean, the court couldn't have been confused that there was a request out there to dismiss this case for failure to file a cost bond, could it?
But again, the issue is the statute says, and we have to strictly construe the statute, on a motion. And a response to a motion to post a cost bond is not a motion to dismiss, as I think the rules set out very clearly. I think that's something that is important here is that there has to be a motion to dismiss. More importantly is, before the dismissal was granted, the 25th, the cost bond was posted at that time. Had the court allowed the 10 days in order to reply, the court would have seen, well, the cost bond is posted as of the 22nd. The court found that as of the 22nd that it was posted. So at that point, the court's in a situation to say, okay, the cost bond is posted. I don't see that there's any prejudice to auto owners.
So it's your position that once it's posted, even if it's after court order, that's sufficient and the statute's been complied with and the court has no discretion to just grant them?
I would say, yeah, I don't think they have any discretion because again, you look at an abuse of discretion and we look at the unfair part of it. Is it unfair to go ahead and dismiss a complaint when the cost bond, when you've complied with what the court requests? Yes, it was not posted by the 17th or the 18th, it was posted the 22nd. But let me give you a scenario. What happens if it's posted by the day it's supposed to, but not processed and doesn't get into the court's records till 4 or 5 days later? Could the argument be made to say, guess what? Even though we took it down there and showed that it was posted on the certain day, the records show it's 3 days later, I'm going to dismiss it. The fact is that it was complied with before the motion to dismiss was granted. And I guess you could look into the scenario where in many instances when there's a motion to dismiss a complaint, this court and the Supreme Court have allowed, you can come in and amend your complaint before and even sometimes after the complaint is dismissed to go ahead and cure those defects. This is no different here.
But given the fact, I mean, all that was raised in your Rule 60 motion.
Right.
And the court said, okay, I see you filed it, but it was filed late. And I don't see that there's an excuse, justifiable excuse for filing it late under the law. I'm required to dismiss. Why is that decision then an abuse of discretion if the court is just acknowledging what was a fact? It was filed after the date that it was due, and he says under the law, I think I'm bound to dismiss the case.
Well, because again, if we get to the fact that had the court allowed us to file a response within the 10-day period, the court would have found at that point that the bond was placed, was posted. And at that point, the court, I would say that it would have been even a bigger abuse of discretion to say, okay, you posted the bond even though it was 2 days late, but I'm going to dismiss anyway because it wasn't posted by the certain date. I think that'd be even a bigger abuse of discretion because we have to take a look under the status set forward in Hyken to say, is it unfair? Is there prejudice? Sure, there's prejudice. And the prejudice here is not to auto owners, it's to Mr. Haywood, because unfortunately statute of limitations runs. And the court, I was assuming, look, I'm going to go ahead and dismiss it without prejudice. You can refile it. Well, that's why I pointed out to the court in the 60B motion saying, can't do it, unfortunately, because the statute of limitations is run. So now here it is. You have a chance to go ahead and look at the prejudice that is borne upon Mr. Haywood, and to go ahead and see that the bond was placed before you dismissed the case. So I think that's factually where we separate a little bit from Heitken, but I think Heitken, if you look at factually what happened there, is it, you know, after the fourth time, and in there, the cost bond was never posted. And Wake goes ahead and files a motion to dismiss. So I think we can take part of what Heitken says and apply it to this case, and then we can also get and take what the rules of procedure say, that, you know, it's an abuse of discretion, as this court said in Union Insurance, to not allow a party sufficient time or the time allotted to go ahead and file a response. So I think these are all abuse of discretion, and these are all reversible error under these circumstances. I'm going to go ahead and reserve the last 4 minutes, if I may.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Della Nelson. Registration number 22500, and I represent Auto Owners Insurance Company. I would like to clarify, I think, one inaccuracy by counsel, and that was that the cost bond, final motion for cost bond was extended to the 17th, I believe, of, I believe it was the 17th of February, and the next, that was a Sunday. The next day, the 18th, was a court holiday, so the 19th would have been the date that the cost bond was actually due. But it was not, but nothing, no extension for time was filed until the 20th, the day after the cost bond was due. I just wanted to point that out to the court. First of all, I would like to stress that excusable neglect is not a standard for determining whether or not there was an abuse of discretion in the dismissal of the complaint here. Because in with regard to the cost bond statute and with regard to the court in Heitken, Heitken asked, what is neglect? What is neglect in determining how it is used in 1316.102? And the court said, neglect is a purely objective fact that a person has not done which was his duty to do. It does not indicate the reason for failure. So basically, the plaintiff in this case can't claim excusable neglect in failing to post a cost bond on time. The statute, because the statute mandating cost bonds for non-residents unambiguously makes any neglect inexcusable by mandating dismissal in the event of any neglect.
Is that the holding of Heitken? Does Heitken say that, gee, there's no excusable neglect allowance under the statute or consistent with the statute?
I believe that's part of the reasoning behind the court's ruling in Heitken. The court has to determine what is neglect, because the only two reasons for the court has to find neglect or I can't remember the other standard. It wasn't present here. Has to determine what neglect is in order to determine whether or not it was found in that case. And the court, in finding that neglect didn't mean excusable neglect, it just meant any neglect. And in the holding at Heitken, I believe, was the failure to that neglect was after several attempts of not posting a cost bond, that can be determined to be neglect. There was no indigency argued in Heitken. There was no indigency argued in this case. It was just, I can post this cost bond, I just need a little bit of time. And the same thing in this case as in Heitken, is the plaintiff continually over and over said, yeah, you know, first I got to go to Mexico, I don't have time. Next, he said, I'm getting some money from my mom. The next time he said, well, I've got this bond person who's getting me this loan, which shouldn't have been an issue in the first place. Because if you look at the facts of this case, the plaintiff had already settled with two different parties before we got to this case. The plaintiff settled with the at-fault party, whose carrier was Allstate, and got $50,000. Then the plaintiff settled with the underinsured motorist carrier for the car that the plaintiff was riding in at the time, driving at the time of the accident, for about $200,000. So the plaintiff had about $250,000 that he had settled for. There is definitely no indigency argument in this case.
How do we square the court's ruling dismissing the case after the cost bond had been submitted? How do we square that with the principles that dismissals are drastic remedies and we prefer to resolve cases on their merits?
I hear you, Your Honor. But we have to look at the cost bond statute, what it says, and what the legislature determined by that. The cost bond statute is very, very specific. It says that 1316.102, if the plaintiff neglects or refuses on or before the day such rule named, the rule being that the rule that the court rules that the cost bond has to be filed on a certain date, if the plaintiff neglects or refuses on or before the date in such rule named to file such instrument, the court on motion shall dismiss the suit. Shall is mandatory. It doesn't give any discretion to the court. And that's what the trial court said. Now, basically, I have no discretion.
Counsel, if you're taking that strict interpretation of the statute clearly says that the court may do it upon motion. It doesn't say upon request. It says upon motion. And unlike the Hitchin case, your client never filed a motion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But so then how do you square that with the statute?
It doesn't say file a motion, upon motion. And we did move in our response brief, as the court noted, on two occasions. We moved to dismiss the case if the plaintiff doesn't file the cost bond. The plaintiff says he had no opportunity to respond to that. However, we believe that would be at the most harmless error. And we cite the case of, I don't believe we did in our brief, but the case of Davis versus Lear, the Colorado Court of Appeals case, 817 Pacific 2nd 539, Colorado Act 1991. It was reversed on other grounds. But in that case,
Counsel, you did not cite this in your brief?
I don't believe we did, Your Honor.
Okay, and did you provide this case to opposing counsel before oral argument today?
I don't believe, no, Your Honor, we did not.
Did you read the order about coming for oral argument about the need to supply supplemental authorities to the court and the other side 7 days before oral argument?
I did not, Your Honor.
I think we need to be attentive to our orders in the future on this. Could you stop the clock for a second? Counselor, are you familiar with this case that she's citing?
I am not.
Would you like to have, today's what, Tuesday? Would you like to have till next Monday to address a response and say a letter of two pages or less addressed to the three members of this panel on this case? And that'll be by Monday. And the bailiff will prepare an order acknowledging that.
Sure. It's 817 Pacific 2nd, 539. Colorado Ave, 1991, reversed on other grounds, and that's 832 Pacific 2nd, 240. 832 Pacific 2nd, 240.
Okay, would you start the time again? Thank you.
I do apologize to the court.
I understand.
In that case, and we believe, first of all, the Hottenstein case talked about that the party wasn't able to file a response brief. In the Davis versus Lear case, the party wasn't able to file a reply brief, as in this case. And they said that the trial court, they agreed with the defendant in Davis versus Lear, the Court of Appeals, that the trial court should wait the statutorily mandated time period so that it could adequately consider the reply before making its determination. However, they said under the circumstances in Lira, we determined that such conduct does not constitute reversible error. And again, in this case, the reply brief, as the court noted, counsel was able to argue what he would have argued in his reply brief in his motion to vacate the order of dismissal. Therefore, as in the Davis versus Lira case, there was really no harm. What we haven't talked about is the motion for extension of time that was filed late in this case. And one of the reasons why the court determined that, it really didn't have any discretion and it needed to dismiss the case. Motions, granting or denying the motions for enlargement of time are under 6B are reviewed on, also under an abuse of discretion standard. And when you look at 6B, when a motion for an enlargement of time is made after the expiration of the specified period of time that something had to be done, the determination of whether or not that was error is you have to look at whether or not there was excusable neglect for filing that motion for extension of time late. In this case, the plaintiff gave no explanation why he filed the third motion late, or no excusable explanation why he filed the third motion on for extension of time on February 20th, 2008, which was a Wednesday, instead of February 19th, 2008. Plaintiff does say that he got a call, or plaintiff's counsel says he got a call on February 20th, 2008, that Wednesday, that his client, Mr. Haywood, couldn't overnight a check on February 14th, 2008, which he thought he could have. That was a Thursday. So plaintiff's counsel expected a check to be overnighted and to receive it on February 15th, 2008, which was a Friday. When he didn't get the overnighted check, why didn't he call his client? Why didn't he find out why he didn't get that check? Why didn't he file a motion for extension of time at that point? I don't think there's any reason, especially if he was expecting a check on the 15th, why he waited to the 20th, the day after the court order expired, to even file a motion for extension of time. I don't believe that it can be said that the court abused its discretion in saying that there was no excusable neglect for filing that motion for extension of time late. Your Honors, I know I have time left, but I think this is really a fairly simple case. I think that auto owners did request dismissal. The court granted a dismissal and did not abuse its discretion in granting the dismissal of this case. And we ask the court to affirm that, unless there's any other questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
With all due respect, counsel, she misinterprets a little bit of factually. No check was coming to me. The check was going directly to the court with all the instructions that were provided for the posting of the bond. Judge Ailey, you brought up an important point. Is dismissal is a drastic remedy here. And under circumstances such as this, is we can go back to the statute and whether, you know, whether there needs to be a motion filed, which I believe didn't occur here, there still becomes the situation where before the dismissal was granted, the cost bond was posted. So at that point, I think it's an abuse of discretion. And as this court knows from Heitken, is basically we're looking at abuse of discretion, which is the conclusions are so manifestly against the weight of evidence in the record as to compel a contrary result such that the trial court's ruling is manifestly arbitrary, unreasonable, or unfair.
Does the statute admit of discretion?
When
the cost bond is and the cost bond is filed out of time, does the statute admit of discretion?
It says shall be dismissed, so that wouldn't say it doesn't allow for discretion. But more to the point, though, it only can be dismissed upon a motion to go ahead and dismiss. So I think if you don't have the motion and the cost bond that is posted, then you go ahead and get rid of that issue as to whether the time frame has been specifically adhered to.
Is there any indication in the record from, say, stamps on documents as to which got filed first on the 22nd, the cost bond or the response to the motion for extension?
I believe I should have looked a little closer. I believe in our 60B motion, we put in there that the cost bond was posted, I believe, first, and then their motion, at least according to the court records, and I believe in the court's denial of the 60B, I think I believe we did indicate when we researched that the bond was posted first, then their motion through LexisNexis was filed, I want to say within an hour, a couple hours after it was posted, as I recall directly from reviewing that. I believe in the circumstances that that it would be an abuse of discretion on several grounds to go ahead and allow the trial court to dismiss the case. I'm asking the court to go ahead and reverse in this circumstances, understanding that the trial court believed that if I dismiss without prejudice, you can go ahead and refile. Unfortunately, that's not an available remedy here. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. And in these circumstances, I think the court has to look at the totality of the circumstances, take Heitken, take the statute, and then take the rules of procedure and apply those all liberally to say that there has been an abuse of discretion. So we would ask the court to go ahead and reverse the trial court.
Am I correct that in the 60B motion and briefing on that motion that the trial court was advised that the statute of limitation had passed?
Yes.
So the court knew of that, just apparently made a mistake when it issued its order. But it wasn't that the court was hadn't been advised that you were out of luck.
Right. We did make that point because I obviously that's an important point in a 60B, and I don't know whether the court just, I'm going to say overlooked it, because I don't believe any court would say, too bad.
Well,
it could, but I think in these circumstances, given the fact, if the cost bond wasn't posted, then the court could say, sure, I empathize with you, but you didn't comply here. The cost bond was posted. I think it would make more sense for the court to say, okay, I am going to go ahead and reverse my previous dismissal. I thank the court.
Thank you, counsel. Thank both counsel for their arguments. The case will stand submitted. An opinion will issue in due course. With that, we've finished our oral arguments for the morning, and the bailiff will announce our recess.